In the 1950s and 60s, jazz musicians rehearsed, hung out, and jammed in a five-story walk-up in New York City. Since then, the building has become known as the Jazz Loft. It was also home to W. Eugene Smith, a celebrated Life magazine photographer. He had left his family in a small town up the Hudson River to hole up in a Manhattan loft, where he shot pictures and tape-recorded the sounds of mid-century life there. Some musicians knew they were being taped. Most didn't care or even notice. Now some of those tapes and stories can be heard through WNYC's Jazz Loft Project radio series, produced in association with the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University. Here's WNYC's Sarah Fishko with Part 1.
Upon entering 821 6th Avenue, starting in 1957, you might hear the warped door of the old building. And then you'd be greeted by photographer W. Eugene Smith, who rented space there for several years.
Hi. Hello there, Eugene. How are you?
More than likely, you'd be photographed by him, as pianist Paul Bley was on occasion.
He had a remarkable six-shooter style. You'd be standing in the hall with him at his loft, and while he was chatting you up and being very attentive and intriguing...
No, thank you. That's very generous and thoughtful, Eugene.
The camera was at his kneecap level, and he was snap, snap, snap.
Smith was also, less obviously, audiotaping nearly everything that happened in the loft, as nearly 600 people over the years came through, talked, crashed there, and played music. People like guitarist Jim Hall and composer David Amram.
I'd heard about it from the different musicians because all of us, I came to New York in 1955, had a kind of a wonderful underground community where the catchword is, where's the session?
Somebody said, a bunch of us are going to go over to this painter's loft on 6th Avenue after work. Would you like to come along? Probably something very casual like that.
And no one said, let's be spontaneous. It was just something that was in the air, and jazz reinforced that spontaneous feeling and that daring and that virtuosity in everyone.
The loft already had a history by the time Smith moved in. It had been a gregarious, jazz-loving painter, David X. Young, who had discovered the loft building in the mid-50s. He'd been looking for a cheap place to paint. This place was cheap, all right, $40 a month, barely any electricity or water, in New York's Flower District in the West 20s along 6th Avenue. Bass player Bill Crow, among many musicians, befriended Young.
He got a piano up there, and we were welcome to come and play. Zoot Sims and Bob Brookmeyer and Dick Katz.
All the famous players of the day stopped by, as Vibes player Teddy Charles tells it.
Miles, Mingus, Art Blakey, of course Bird. When Bird came up there, it was like a visit from God, you know.
Then Eugene Smith, a man given to shooting 3,000 photos while on assignment to shoot 30, became drawn to the space and to the commercial neighborhood around it that was completely deserted at night. He left his family upstate and moved in. His son, Pat Smith, visited the loft many times as his estranged father became entrenched there.
He kept renting more and more floors and stored more and more stuff. It's kind of a wonder the whole place didn't collapse.
Composer Steve Reich visited the loft often.
I just remember, you know, the one overpowering image, which is I walked into this room, and this room was wall to wall. You know, it was four walls of photographs. Into those photographs were stuck other photographs, which were kind of like leaning, you know, and then behind them were other sort of stuff. So the whole room was kind of this leaning series of photographs. I was about to fall and engulf you.
In the 1950s, lofts were still an underground way of life, recalls composer David Amram.
You weren't supposed to live in them, but they did. And they were basically workplaces that had either been abandoned or were kind of left to people to renovate on the sly, and artists of different kinds would sneak in there to live.
Sam Stevenson, author of the new book, The Jazz Loft Project, and the man who uncovered these tapes in the Smith Archive, reminds us that there was some deception involved.
They had to have plywood boxes that they put over top of their mattresses to hide the fact that they were sleeping there, because the cops would come over and write them, you know, some sort of citation.
It was what we called a funky place.
Pianist and songwriter Dave Frischberg was a regular in the loft.
Funky now has become a term of enthusiastic approval. But in those days, funky meant messy, dirty, and smelly.
Eugene Smith felt right at home there. He turned his tape recorders on soon after he arrived in 1957. He began with the idea of recording his cats, his son Pat remembers.
Lots of cats. I don't know how many cats he had. I couldn't even guess. There were cats everywhere.
He recorded the television and radio programs he had on daily in the loft as he was printing and working in his darkroom.
Too sanguine about the prospects of fallout shelters.
Which reveal a lot about the obsessions of the era, late 50s, early 60s.
Has Dresden been rebuilt?
Yes.
In one room and another, musicians gathered for jam sessions. He taped those too, observes his former assistant and colleague, photographer Harold Feinstein.
Gene Smith not simply turned his tape recorder on, but he practically wired the whole loft upstairs and downstairs so that he can tape everything. So this was a project of his, or he was an extraordinary voyeur, or both. Yeah, probably both.
Hello?
He even taped some of his own phone calls.
Bill?
Yeah?
Gene Smith.
Yeah, Gene.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good, up to my ears, as a matter of fact.
You up to your ears?
Yeah.
In what? That might be interesting.
All this at a time when, as bass player and loft regular Steve Swallow recalls, it was a rather odd thing to be doing.
The machines were still fairly primitive. It wasn't that far from the days of wire recorders, and people didn't commonly have tape recorders at that time, so it was a kind of innovative and exciting venture that he was involved in 1960.
So, as it turns out, the jazz loft was much more than just jazz. Again, Sam Stevenson, who led the project to organize, digitize, and catalog the tapes.
Early on, what we really honed in on was everything but the music. What were the conversations about? What could you hear out of the window? Because it gave us a sense of what it was like to live in America, in New York City, in this particular neighborhood in Manhattan, in this time period, in a manner that nothing else could.
And there's the music, of course. This is Sonny Clark, jamming with a group in the jazz loft in 1960. So we wander into sounds and stories of life in a grimy old building in some of the golden years for New York jazz. For NPR News, I'm Sarah Fishkin.
The Jazz Loft series continues next week when we'll hear about the collaboration between Thelonious Monk and Hall Overton, the Juilliard teacher, composer, and jazz pianist who drew many musicians to work and play in the loft. This is NPR's Weekend Edition, directed by Charlotte Baer, with production help from Ned Wharton, Elaine Heinzman, Kimberly Adams, Gemma Waters, Veronica Miller, Thomas Pierce, Walter Ray Watson, Habiba Noshin, Sarah Molnar, and Annika Robbins. Our technical director is Burke Hun. Tom Woodward is at the operations desk. Our librarian is Key Maleski. Melissa Goh is our producer. Our senior editor is Jenny Bergall. Our senior supervising producer is Devar Iran Ardalan. I'm Leanne Hansen.
The Jazz Loft Project radio series is supported in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities and by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts.